It's Bill Left with you on WGN, along with my guest, Bill Dwyer. Bill is the author of Anxiety Across the Americas, One Man's 20,000-Mile Motorcycle Journey. Bill, if you don't mind, I want to go back just a little bit. We didn't finish off your story of bribery and deceit there in Mexico. It kind of, depending on who you're asking, has a happy ending, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Who you're asking is right. When I was in Guatemala, I uploaded the video of the incident as a warning to other travelers. It got picked up by the El Norte newspaper, which is the largest newspaper publication in all of Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on the front paper in Monterrey, Mexico City, and Guadalajara, and the officers were eventually fired as a result of it.
Wow. And at some point, I know that sounds exciting, and it is exciting, but then are you then worried about revenge at all?
Totally.
Yeah.
After that point, I felt like I had a target on my back, potentially. but I continued on for another 5 months and 12,000 or so miles, and I was fine.
Bill, I'm curious, is there asking you about the idea or suggesting to you the idea that a bribe is in order to keep you out of jail? They're asking for $100. You were probably carrying, because you're on the road for 8 months, you were probably carrying quite a bit of money on you at the time, weren't you?
No, actually.
No?
They are really just all over the world, and they put out the local currency at the most efficient best bank rate. So there's not really a whole lot of need to carry a lot of cash on you.
How did you decide what you were and what you were not going to bring on this trip along with you? You have to carry as minimal amount of things as you possibly can on a trip like this. So how did you make the decision of what stayed and what didn't come?
Well, one great thing about motorcycles is that it does limit what you can bring.
Yep.
Because most of the time, I personally just overplan and bring things that I'll never actually use. And I'd been motorcycle touring throughout the U.S. for about 4 or 5 years before I took the trip. So I had gotten an idea for what I wanted to take, camping supplies, cooking equipment, and things like that. But one rule that helped out throughout the trip is that if I didn't use an item for 30 days, I would give it to someone or just throw it out.
Hmm.
And I had probably thrown out or given away half of my things. And when it comes down to it, you don't really need all that much to get by.
Yeah. Did you tend to, you said you brought some camping equipment. Did you always camp out or did you stay in some hotels?
It was a mixture. So I camped depending on what country I was in. But overall, I probably camped a third of the time. I couch surfed the other third, which is a worldwide network of people that kind of open up their homes to travelers to stay for free.
Yeah.
And then the other time I just stayed in hostels. So it made it very economical.
With this worldwide network of people that will let you stay with them, is that something you'd have to secure in advance, or could you just call somebody up and say, hey, I happen to be in your town. What do you got for me tonight? Is that possible?
A lot of things are done very quickly, ad hoc like that, but I try and give, usually it's customary to give a week or at least a couple days' notice.
Yeah. You had a cell phone with you, right?
No. I had a small, cheap little laptop with me, and I use internet cafes primarily because they're all over the, no matter where you're at, it seems like there's always some place that has internet.
Yeah.
The world is online, and it's amazing that how interconnected everything is. The reason I didn't bring a cell phone is because the areas that I was going in was so remote that there weren't often cell towers, and I didn't want to deal with the hassle of getting on a particular carrier's network, but I did use a personal locator beacon, which in the event of a emergency, I could kind of send a distress signal, and it would use satellite to pinpoint where I'm at and send help.
You probably didn't have too extreme weather changes. I wouldn't imagine. But I'm trying to figure out clothing-wise, like how many different sets of clothes did you bring, and were there any extreme, like anything that was really, really hot or really, really cold, anything like that?
Well, as I started getting towards Costa Rica and Panama, it was getting pretty hot there.
Yeah.
And the heat I can deal with as long as I've got a breeze going through my suit, then I can cool off. But the temperatures did get pretty extreme when I went through the Andes mountain range in Peru, and the highest pass that I went over was 15,000 feet. So things got pretty cold up there. And as you go further south, in Patagonia, the winds get very strong and temperatures only continue to fall.
So did you have with you, I'm hoping you had at least a jacket or a coat or something like that. You did, didn't you?
Yes. I had a large Aero-Stitch motorcycle suit, and then basically just a bunch of layers, nothing too special, and a good windbreaking jacket.
Bill, do you go at some point, because you're essentially alone for 8 months, I mean, you're making some contact when you're staying with people, but for the better part of nearly every day and every night, you're by yourself. Do you start to go a little stir crazy at some point?
At some point, yes, but it's interesting traveling alone, because there's when you travel with someone, and it's noticeable that you're with that person, and you walk into an area, there's this invisible bubble over you, around both of you. And I believe that the potential for interactions with strangers and other people is less. But when you're by yourself, you're less threatening, and suddenly people are curious about you, and they start to talk to you. And so, and also I'm a beastie skin Reddit, gringo in the middle of,
yeah.
And there's on a big motorcycle. So there's that as well. That draws people towards you, and it was very infrequent that I didn't have someone to talk to or hang out with.
But now, everything you said there, though, is that something that you figured out as the trip went on, or had that been, like, during the planning stages, did you say, I could certainly ask a friend to go with me, but then I won't have that advantage of going in someplace and being able to interact? Is that something you learned during the trip, or did you know that going in?
I knew that going in, and there was actually some people that wanted to potentially meet up with me and go along with me, but I chose to purposely do it alone for that reason.
I see. I don't know that I would almost want to have, I wouldn't almost want, I would definitely want someone to be along with me. It's safety in numbers, and it's, it's just that thing where you can say to somebody, should we go this way or this way? There's like a million times where I'd go, I need somebody else there to talk to. You didn't feel that much though, huh?
No, not that much. I kind of get annoyed with company during travel, because people want to stop when you don't want to, or they want to go one direction or there, and on an extreme trip like this, tensions can get high, so all those variables kind of go out the window when you're off by yourself and you can do whatever you like.
Did you bring an iPod with you? Did you bring music with you?
I did. I frequently listen to music while I ride, or podcasts and things like that. So,
What were you listening to?
Let's see. I think Ray LaMontagne was.
Oh, really? Yeah.
One of my favorites during that period that I was listening to. Just a combination of a whole bunch of other things.
Were you tempted at all? This just because of the way my mind works, it doesn't mean, Bill, that yours should work this way, but I would almost want to play music that was indigenous to the region I was in. Depending on the country I was in, I would sort of want to play their music. Was there any kind of inclination to go in that direction?
There's this one band called Yuachi, which is a Brazilian band. Although I didn't go through Brazil, it did have this primal jungle type music to or feeling to it, and I did play that at times when I did go through jungles and things like that.
Yeah. Bill, when I think about films that have done essentially a version of what you've done, you know, like Motorcycle Diaries or, you know, Easy Rider, although Easy Rider didn't end well, so that's a terrible example to bring up with you. It has, like what I mentioned earlier, it just has that sweeping feeling of, wow, look at the world in front of me. I'm here and I'm just going so fast and I'm cruising through. Is it cinematic in its scope? Like while you're driving it, do you almost feel like you're in a movie?
Yeah, I really think so. I think there's something about motorcycling that makes the senses more more heightened, and your awareness is heightened as well. And there's one very basic practical thing that's happening when you're on a motorcycle. If you start thinking about all those things that you're worried about back home or at work and whatever else was bothering you, then you're going to run off the road and die. So, just focusing on the road is a nice kind of distraction, I guess, from all the other things.
So goal number one should always be do not ride off the road and die. That if you're charting your goals, that should always be the number one priority, right?
I think that's a good priority to have. Yeah.